Another weekend of violent protests in Hong Kong as a high court rules against a ban on masks that could raise tensions with Beijing.
It's likely that they will not be pleased with this development.
And Aramco aims for a valuation of up to $1.7 trillion, less than expected.
They have essentially given up hope that they can make inroads in enticing U.S. investors.
Plus, President Trump delays a decision on possible e-cigarette restrictions. This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we take a look at the Saudi oil giant Aramco and why its target valuation is lower than some people had been hoping for, here's what you missed. It was another violent weekend in Hong Kong. Protesters continued to occupy the campus of Polytechnic University. Early this morning, they threw Molotov cocktails and shot arrows at police who tried to retake the campus. In an attempt to relieve tensions, the president of the university, Tuang Jingguang, negotiated a temporary ceasefire.
If the protesters do not initiate the use of force, the police will not initiate the use of force. In addition, we have also received permission from the police for you to leave the campus peacefully, and I will personally accompany you to the police station to ensure that your case will be fairly processed.
However, as of this recording, several hundred protesters still remained on campus. Separately, Hong Kong's High Court ruled that a ban on masks was unconstitutional. From Hong Kong, Natasha Khan has more.
The mask ban was put forth last month as a way that the government said could potentially sort of manage the protests. Instead, however, the protests have become increasingly violent. A lot of people have defied this mask ban in the past month in peaceful or violent protests alike. But one of the things that really does show, I think, also is that there is a lot of there's still strong judicial independence and the rule of law here in Hong Kong. And, you know, as commentators have told The Wall Street Journal, you know, even at such a politically sensitive time and you know, when there are heightened tensions, the courts will still act without fear or favor.
But Natasha says this isn't the end of the story. The ruling can still be appealed, but that it's likely that Beijing will not be pleased.
All along, Beijing has talked about having a stronger response from government authorities and the city's independent judiciary. You know, for example, there has been talk about faster court hearings, things like that, for people who have been arrested so far. But again, you know, it's likely that they will not be pleased with this development. And, you know, but it remains to be seen how they will respond.
As you can probably tell, the story is still developing and things on the ground are changing rapidly. We'll have the latest updates for you in our afternoon edition later today. And President Trump has delayed making a decision on restricting e-cigarettes. The move comes after pushback from the industry and users. In September, the president had indicated that he might ban the sale of flavored e-cigarettes aimed at younger users. The White House said discussions are continuing and that the administration was committed to responsibly protecting the health of children. Now, our main story this morning. We're going to return to a subject we've been following closely, Aramco. This is Saudi Arabia's state oil giant whose path to public markets has been filled with twists and turns. It's still expected to list its shares in December, but now we're reporting that Aramco is considering a valuation of up to $1.7 trillion. That might sound like a lot of money, but it actually falls short of what Saudi Arabia's Prince Mohammed bin Salman had been hoping for. Ben Dumit is in London. So, Ben, walk me through this valuation. Why did Aramco decide to go with the lower end of the spectrum?
Yeah, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, he was targeting a valuation of $2 trillion. But based on the price range that was released over the weekend, they're targeting now a range of a valuation of between 1.6 and 1.7 billion, a trillion, sorry. That's, you know, that's quite a big number, obviously, but it falls well short of what the Crown Prince wanted. Part of that reflects the fact that institutional investors still think at that level, at that valuation, the company is still too expensive. They were interested in a valuation of 1 to $1.5 trillion. At that point, you would have expected a lot of international interest. But the crown prince now is in a kind of a tough spot where he's going to have to rely a lot more on local Saudi investors to make this IPO a success.
But this is a company that's more profitable than Apple. Why is this valuation coming in less than expected? What are investors worried about?
They're worried about a lot of political and economic risk that's attached to Aramco. Even though it's the most profitable company in the world, its earnings are tied to the oil price. So they can be the earnings can be very volatile. For example, in the third quarter, profits were down 18% year over year to reflect the lower oil prices. And the risks are compounded by the political risks that come with Aramco. You know, there was the attacks on their oil facilities in September, and that sort of reminded investors that investing in Aramco means you're exposing yourself to a lot of political risk, geopolitical risk, that you wouldn't, say, if you bought shares in Exxon or Chevron.
So this valuation of 1.6 to 1.7 trillion, I mean, that would mean that they'd float around $25 billion. So would it lose this world's most valuable IPO title that we've been tossing about for what feels like years now?
It could. It could. If it's priced at the mid-range of the valuation, then the size of the actual IPO would fall just below or just shy of $25 billion. Which is this sort of the threshold for the biggest set in 2014 by Alibaba. So it's a big, not only is it a blow to the economy, because the reason they're doing, Saudi Arabia is doing this IPO, is to raise money to diversify its economy away from oil. At the same time, there's a lot of ego behind this idea of being the biggest IPO ever, carrying off the biggest IPO ever. And so far that's at risk.
And what does Aramco have to say about all of this?
Well, they've been silent. I mean, the rules around marketing an IPO restrict a company in terms of what they can say publicly. They've issued their target price range. They've come out and said we're committed to a growing dividend to try and make it more attractive. They've launched a major marketing campaign in Saudi Arabia to drum up local interest. They're getting the banks there to provide loans to locals to buy the shares. But one telling thing about the disappointment that Aramco is feeling as over this process is the fact that Aramco is not going to adopt the rules required for them to market the offering over the next 2 weeks to U.S. investors, which speaks to the fact that they have essentially given up hope that they can make inroads in enticing U.S. investors in a big way, a major way, to buy the shares.
You can find all of our Aramco coverage up on WSJ.com. On to markets. As you might have noticed, they've been on a tear recently. In the very last minute of trading on Friday, the Dow topped 28,000. Some of the biggest risers have been bank stocks, manufacturers, and oil producers. That's interesting because these are all sectors that are economically sensitive. Quentin Webb explains.
What we've seen in the latest rally in the last few weeks since early October is a big outperformance from so-called cyclical stocks. That means, of course, companies in sectors that are sensitive to economic cycles, so banks, industrial companies, and so on. And, you know, the implicit message there is that investors are getting a bit more relaxed about the economic outlook, whereas perhaps a few months ago, there was more fear that the US might tip into a steep downturn or a recession. That seems to have receded a bit in tandem with the sense that, in fact, Chinese-US trade relations are starting to improve. And of course, we're seeing perhaps some signs that some of the global economic conditions are starting to trough as well.
And here's what else we're paying attention to today. It's a big week for retailers, with Target, Home Depot, and Macy's all set to report their third quarter earnings. Their reports follow recent economic data that saw a modest increase in retail sales in October. And in Washington, the impeachment hearings will continue. Eight more witnesses are set to testify, including the U.S. ambassador to the EU, Gordon Sondland, on Wednesday. We're reporting that his role as an intermediary between President Trump and senior Ukrainian officials has become a focal point of the inquiry. Over the weekend, we reported that Mr. Sondland had kept the Trump administration in the loop about his dealings with Ukraine. Rebecca Bellhouse has more from Washington.
Sondland on Wednesday is going to be in an interesting position because he's someone who the White House initially expected to be a positive witness for them, who would sort of emphasize that there was no quid pro quo and that he did not consider this push for investigations troubling. However, in his revised testimony earlier this month, Sondland indicated that, in fact, he did relay a quid pro quo to a Ukrainian official, and that in a September conversation with an aide to the Ukrainian president, he said that the aid that was being held up to Ukraine was not going to be released until Ukraine announced the investigations the president was pushing for. So on Wednesday, it's going to be interesting to see how he weaves that sort of thing with the fact that he didn't feel like this push for investigations that he was working on was necessarily problematic. In his view, the president had instructed him and others to work with Rudy Giuliani to resolve the president's concerns about Ukraine, which entailed launching these investigations. And they felt that if they did not work with Rudy Giuliani, they would effectively be giving up on the U.S. relationship with Ukraine.
The president has defended his dealings with Ukraine as proper. Finally, good news if you've got a few million dollars to spare and are looking to invest in some art. We're reporting that the market is increasingly looking like a bargain hunter's paradise. The sales that concluded from Sotheby's, Christie's, and Phillips last week were a third smaller than the year before. Here's just one example. Initially, no one bid on Marc Jacobs' sale of his 1974 Ed Ruscha painting, She Gets Angry at Him. Eventually, after it went up for sale a second time, a phone bidder bought it for $1.7 million, below the $2 million asking price. Works by Juan Miro, Picasso, and Donald Judd also went for below their asking prices. That's what's news from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.